Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
IE.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Anyway, we're joined in studio by Kevin Doyle, the head of news at Media House Group, executive editor of the Irish Independent and co-host of the Indo Daily podcast. Sinead Carroll is editor of the Journal.ie. Jim O'Callaghan of Fianna Fáil is seeking to be re-elected in Dublin Bay South, the party spokesperson on justice. Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin seeking re-election for Dublin Fingal West, the party spokesperson for workers' rights, enterprise, trade and employment. But we're giving the two politicians a rest for a moment as we get an assessment of the campaign thus far from the two journalists in our midst. So we'll go to you, Kevin, first.
I think it has failed to ignite so far. The biggest controversy being Michael O'Leary. And if that is as bad as it gets, then I think we'll talk about this as a relatively boring campaign. I think what's lacking for me is a real big vision, Pat, if I'm honest. There's an auction going on. Everybody is promising everything. And you know, it feels like that run up to the budget where different ministers are fighting for the department and somebody wants a 200 euro hike on this and someone wants a threshold lifted on that. And that's the space we seem to be in, is someone will announce 5,000 guards. Well, then someone will come along and announce 6,000 guards. Someone will announce more police for immigration and someone else will announce extra on top of that. And the same with childcare. Everybody seems to be doing it for 200 or 250 euro a week now. So it's a real auction rather than a vision for where we're going to be in 5 or even 10 years.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment, Kevin. I think everything has monetary value attached to it, and we'll give you this. And oh, of course, well, we've already promised that. And like, you'll see that in some of the stuff even today around carers. I think housing has been the thing that is the big issue. I'm still skeptical about whether it'll change people's votes in the same way as it did in 2020, with that surge to Sinn Féin basically on a housing issue and saying we trust Sinn Féin on housing and we want something different on housing. The housing issue is more fragmented now, I think, than it was 5 years ago. But it is the thing that's coming up. Any of our reporters who are out canvassing are saying it's mostly housing coming up.
It's the problem for the parties, no matter which side of the fence they're on. In order to tease things out, you need nuance, and that's not possible really. You might get it on the odd doorstep, but if you're trying to explain how your childcare is going to work and where you're going to find the people to do the childcare and how a state childcare system might integrate with a private childcare system, I mean, I don't know where to start.
Which is why you get headline figures like it's only going to cost you a tenner a day or it's only going to cost you 200 a month. And so that's why it's boiled down to those things. So we understand that. But when you're actually in it and you're trying to decide like where your vote goes, I think people do want a little bit more detail. And I did think, in fairness, on Monday, the housing debate was a grown-up conversation. And I think there was on Katie Hannan's show. And I think that actually does help. It doesn't help ignite the whole thing, like Kevin was saying. You know, you kind of need a bit of controversy and a bit of spark for that. But I think it allows people to think more discerningly about their vote. And I think that's a good thing for democracy.
As we approach the election, though, is there going to be a focus on the fundamental difference, I suppose, between Louise's party, Sinn Féin's approach to housing and the approach of the government parties, which is keep going with the help to buy. And Sinn Féin, I think it's fair to say, they want to abolish that, but build more social housing.
Well, we want to phase it out. I think it's important that anyone within the application process knows that it's not a cliff edge, but it is a scheme that serves only to push up the cost of housing. And of course, that suits the coalition, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party, for whatever reason. But we believe in affordable and secure housing. And just to the points that were made in terms of, you know, not having the space to discuss the vision, that's why we launched our housing policy back at the beginning of September. It is a very comprehensive policy. It has been not just well thought out and well researched, but also peer reviewed. It is our plan for how we will fix the housing system. But I suppose on the doorsteps in Fingal West,
it's difficult, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not easy to undo the damage that's been done by the coalition and by successive Fingal
West. No, I mean explaining, because we've had Owen O'Brien explaining ad nauseum the nuance of your housing policy and the detail.
And people are engaging with the detail.
I'm not sure that everyone in your party can explain it as well as he would.
People are, and of course, like, it's Owen's document, and you know, he lives, eats and breathes housing, which is why we want to see him in the Customs House as the housing minister, because it is something he's incredibly passionate about. But when you go to the doors and you speak to people, they want to know that you have a plan. And for us, our plan was launched in September, so we have had a bit of time and space to talk to people. So when we're talking to people, they have well thought out
questions. I agree with you, Pat, in that the nuance is difficult, and I think it's difficult because of the fragmentation. So there's some people who do want the Help to Buy scheme because they're in a cohort that have money, have some money, don't necessarily need a social house, just want to be able to get onto the market. So it's different to 5 years ago. That fragmentation means it's harder to get the right approach for every single person. And I think that means that we've also, people will look at the different parties. Like the last week's Sunday Independent poll, which said, or it was the week before, they asked, who do you trust to fix the housing crisis in terms of the leaders? And Simon Harris came on top, out on top, even though he's been in government for the last 13 years, you know?
The electorate is very sophisticated. They have a good understanding of what's happening out there. You know, I think, Pat, they're better informed than sometimes politicians or the media give them credit for. Housing is obviously a huge issue. But it's my own assessment of it is that I think the public see there's been progress in the past 4.5 years. We haven't solved the problem. But they know from where we're going, from seeing the cranes around, from seeing development, that there has been progress. With 30,000 units constructed in 2022, over 32,000 in 2023, we're going to get over 35,000 target this year. So there is progress. We can't go from 0 to 60 immediately.
Yeah.
So progress has been made. In terms of what has been said about the Help to Buy and the First Home Scheme, like, they're not two mutually exclusive things. We are building social housing, and social housing has been built more now than it has been at any stage since the 1970s. But as well as that, we can introduce and have the Help to Buy and First Home Scheme, which are helping people up to a figure of 100,000.
But I think the headlines, the cost of housing, and you know it well.
Yeah, but can I just finish?
Ever since you introduced your scheme, the cost of housing has gone up, and ditto, the same thing is happening with rents. I mean, you talk about progress, but how many children were homeless on the day that the coalition was formed, do you know? How many children were homeless?
Can I just answer that? That's a very important question. I'm here to answer questions.
How many children were homeless? And how many children are homeless now? That is our measurement that I think people are interested in.
Obviously, homeless figures have gone up, and it is unacceptable. And it is not something, and it is not something that anyone in government can be proud of. But like, we have to realise this is an issue of great complexity. It dominates around the world. Many Western countries have the same issue. The choice for the people is, do you want to go and start with a new plan that's been put forward by Sinn Féin, start from scratch, or do you want to go with Dara O'Brien and Fianna Fáil's plan that is making progress and is working? I think the safe, sensible and safe thing to do
is
to stick with the plan that we have at present.
Who is it working for?
It's working for the 30,000 people that got houses in 2022, the 32,000 in 2023.
To go abroad because they cannot afford to start their life here. They can't afford to rent because rents are out of control. They can't afford to buy because house prices are going up. Do the average age of a person buying their first home, they're nearly 40, Jim. I know that you're willing to admit you're ashamed about the homelessness figures, and that's fair enough. But I mean, you know, expressing shame or saying you're not proud of it or whatever it is, that's not the same thing as being able to fix it. Under your government and under the last coalition type arrangement that you had, by every measure, your housing policies have failed.
Can I come in just briefly? Sorry, Kevin, before you come in. Every politician is brilliant at describing the problem. What the public need to look at is who's going to solve it.
Exactly.
What plan is going to be better placed to solve it? We can see that the plan that's been put in place in Housing for All is making progress. That there has to be recognition it's making progress. So the option for the people is, OK, we're going to ditch that plan and start with a new plan, or stick with the plan and trying to ramp it up to the numbers that we need, which is 60,000 a year.
I think Jim is right when he says that the public are probably more sophisticated than they sometimes get credit for. But I think the problem with the debate that we have here is that, OK, so you've helped to buy in the First Home Scheme and what the government are doing. Then you have Sinn Féin's plan around building on state land and retaining some equity in the house. You have a debate then around whether there should be a state construction company, or you have the Land Development Agency as it's constructed now. And the truth is that I think most people sitting down to look at that, they're not professors in housing. Mm. And it's very hard to know which of all of those is the right mix to fix this problem. So I don't think that the governments have had 5 years at this. The problem isn't fixed. Jim will obviously say there's lots of progress. Louise's plan is untested, so we don't know what impact that will have on the market or what way that will sway. And I think it's actually really confusing for voters to try.
Do you know what is
which way to go?
What's terrifying?
Can I just make one very brief point? there's absolutely no sense in the suggestion that the people who caused the housing crisis or disaster, I think Michael D. Higgins called it, are going to be the ones to fix it. The available evidence and the test is all around us. We see it. I see it every day in my offices and in my advice clinics. People are locked out of housing. Young people are making the decision to emigrate because they don't believe they can have a future here. There is nothing more certain than the people who have caused this will not and cannot be the people to fix it.
Well, to borrow from Fianna Fáil's old campaign slogan, a lot done, more to do, won't they say, and Jim is probably going to say it now, we're already fixing it, but it does take time. There is no magic overnight fix.
Correct.
And Sinn Féin can't magic up the builders.
Pat, how many overnights have they had? How many thousands of overnights have they had?
Well, the question from one of the listeners, tell Louise, that's grand, but where are we going to get the builders? Where is Sinn Féin going to get the builders that will accelerate the process to twice and three times what the current government is doing?
Okay, so what we need to do is we need to say to our young people that they can have a future here, that we want them to stay here, that we don't want them to go to Australia.
About, where are you getting the builders?
Okay, so at the moment, there's people in the construction industry. When you talk to the trade unions, they say there's the capacity there to build up the numbers that are in apprenticeships, that there is an appetite there, that as the office building slows, that those workers will be redeployed. And we do need to open up new pipelines in terms of apprenticeships for young people coming through to give them that future. But I'm telling you this, Pat, I don't want to see any more of our young, talented, educated people being forced out of this state because they don't have a future.
I was going to say to Kevin's point about he was saying people understand what's in front of them, but they don't necessarily know which is the right way. But I think some of that is the scepticism, which your texter has just said. Where do the numbers come from? How does that actually work? And Louise hasn't answered the question there. There is, you've talked about apprenticeships. Apprentices are brilliant, but they don't build houses by themselves.
Absolutely.
So I do think there is.
There is a timing issue with apprentices. It takes three or 4 years to become a qualified spark or chippy.
And in the meantime,
and what I haven't heard from anybody, sorry, Louise,
building homes.
Just what I haven't heard from anyone saying that we can open up certain work visas to get people in, because I think parties don't want to talk about immigration and they don't want to talk about migration, because that would be one obvious place that you get builders. You open up very specific
I used to say this during the Celtic Tiger, that we are bringing in Polish building workers to build houses for the Polish building workers who are going to live here. Mm-hmm. So suppose you bring in lots of people from whatever part of the world.
But most people should be building more than one house, and that was one of our construction reports recently, is we do need to be more productive.
No,
we need
bigger production. Where are the construction workers going to live? Are we going to have people in porta cabins erected by the developers themselves in order to build the houses? I mean, when you bring people in, they've got to live somewhere.
Yeah, that's part of the layers of the issue here. And it was mentioned once, but one of the things we talk constantly about people needing to buy houses, but there's a huge cohort of people who want and need to rent apartments and flats and be able to do it when they're leaving there. One of the reasons we've so many people still living in their parents' houses is because you can't get just cheap, affordable, decent accommodation to move out of your house when you're in your 20s. So we've infantilized groups of generations now. We're on our probably third generation of people who just can't get to leave their parents' house until they're in their 30s.
I know. We can describe the problem. Listen, there's a responsibility on politicians to be honest. Complex issues, and this is an issue that dominates in many Western countries, complex issues cannot be solved through simple soundbite solutions. Like, no party who gets into government later this year or early next year is going to produce 60,000 units next year, Pat. We're just not going to be able to get up to 60,000 immediately in 2025. We'll get close to it, but it's going to be very difficult. We need to recognise that the policies that have been put in place are working. I can understand the criticism. People say they're not working fast enough, but they're clearly working. And all I would say is, when people come to make their choice on the 29th of November, you can go with a plan that's working, or you can take your chances with a plan that hasn't even been tested. And I think we should stick with the former. It's a much safer option. Progress being made. Look around. There are cranes everywhere. Houses are being built. We're building social houses as well. It's a complex issue, but we're getting there. And Dara O'Brien deserves to be commended for the change of emphasis.
Jim, you can't answer for Fine Gael, but I think there'll be some people questioning, like, the coalition made an agreement about what to do with the Apple billions, and now it's in the Fine Gael idea bank that they're going to use some of those billions for a Help to Buy scheme, which wasn't what you agreed with them. It was an infrastructure play. So these things are the things that make the electorate kind of question, okay, well, is this actually a housing plan?
Know,
because if you need the Apple billions
I'm not here to answer for Fine Gael.
It's you're not here to answer for Fine Gael, Jim, and that's part of the strangeness. This is actually one of the best debates I've heard, Pat, in the week of since the campaign has started on this issue, because actually most of the time has been spent with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael taking lumps out of one another. And that has been kind of the main narrative of the election so far. So it's actually really good that listeners get to hear that this teased out. But at the end of it, I still, sitting listening to the guys, I'm no clearer on which plan is actually going to work. And that is the real problem for voters.
But the evidence of the failure of the plan in existence is all around us, Kevin. And, you know, when you knock on people's doors, and, you know, I do it all the time, but obviously I do a bit more of it in the run-up to an election. They want to talk about solutions, and that's why I am more than happy and proud to talk about our fully costed, solutions-focused plan. And you're right to say that it has not been tested, but the test of the current coalition, and I understand that Jim doesn't want to have to defend his coalition partners, but they voted together for their housing policy. So their housing policy is what is keeping people in their parents' back bedroom at the moment.
You're both out in the doors. Would both of you say housing is the number one question that's coming up when you're knocking on doors?
Yeah, it is. Housing and rent. And like the Irish public have a great sense of civic duty. Even people who have houses, they're concerned about it as well. It's an integral part of any development of a country. But a lot of them recognise that they see progress. They say, OK, you're making progress. And they recognise that changing tack at this stage, not a sensible idea. Not a sensible idea.
Some of the comments coming in. One impact of the reduction of the cost of new homes is that the value of existing homes will be reduced. The family's biggest asset will be reduced. Who in their right mind would vote for that? That's from Bill. Louise.
My home is my home. It's where I live. It's the place where I raised my family. I don't regard it as an asset necessarily. We know that the price of a new home has to come down. I mean,
how does it come down in terms of building costs and labour costs? And you want good wages for building workers.
Exactly. And that involves the state building on state owned land and ensuring that we minimise the costs. Also involves us using the new methods, new technology, new methods of construction. I was down in the factory in Carlow where they make 80% of the home is built in the factory. So there's much less on-site work. It's much more efficient in terms of the use of labour. We need to see there's space in that factory. There shouldn't
Whose
be space
fault
in
is
that,
that
factory.
That's not government's fault, surely.
Well, I think we need to see a bigger emphasis on
sophisticated enough.
Well, I think we need to see a bigger emphasis in terms of building social and affordable homes in using that new technology that exists. But when you talk to people on the doorsteps, what they want to know is that you have a plan, which Sinn Féin has. What they want to know is that you're serious about fixing the housing crisis. Absolutely, we are. And that, you know, nobody is going to believe that the people who caused the crisis are going to be the ones
Jim,
to fix it.
Listen, everyone in Dáil Éireann wants to fix the housing crisis. I've no doubt about that. But as I said before, to recognise this is an international problem and we've tried to figure out in Ireland how can we resolve it. The plan that we have in place, I think, is an effective plan. I think Dara O'Brien deserves to be commended. Like, I do have to make the political point. I'm conscious Fine Gael aren't here. But like when you look at Owen Murphy's book, like the political desire wasn't there for the previous 10 years before Fianna Fáil and Dara O'Brien got into office. And he has had an impact. I thought also as well the Monday night debate and Katie Hannon, the housing debate, was a good debate as well. Sometimes trickier when you have more people. But like the public was able to see what are the contesting visions in respect of it. And I think they will respond positively to the progress that's been made.
Good thing about apprenticeship on the text screen here. It's 4 years, but also you need to greatly improve conditions in construction to attract new people.
Absolutely. And the one of the last things that was done in the Dáil was the signing of the SEO for the construction industry. That took months and months and months. That should have been done much, much quicker than it was. So, yes, we absolutely do need to. But that how we do that is by ensuring that we get the workers in construction organised. How we do that is we deliver on a right to organise for workers, which is a key pillar that Sinn Féin will be standing in this election on, giving workers the right to organise, giving workers access to their trade union, trade unions access to their workers. Unfortunately, we have quite an anti-union streak running through the middle of this coalition. They haven't delivered for workers. workers' rights. In fact, they were celebrating the fact that they're going to pause the modest increase in sick leave, which is due to be implemented in January 2025. The coalition are saying now that that won't happen. They're only due to get an extra 2 days. So when it comes to matters of workers' rights and conditions in the construction industry, workers know who's on their side. Yeah. They know they can trust Sinn Féin.
In terms of sick leave and so on, any changes in that impact all the little cafe owners and so on who are saying they're going to the wall if they are constrained to live with all of those increases introduced by government.
But I don't think we should look at it like that, and I don't think that's very fair. I don't think it's fair to look at a worker on a low income and say you are nothing but a burden. Actually, what makes our coffee shops as great as they are the staff that work in them. So what we need to see, we need to see the 9% VAT rate reintroduced, but we also need to see legislation to ensure that workers can get organised in their workplace, and we need to see the PRSI rebate, which Sinn Féin are proposing, which will go directly to those businesses who are employing workers on a low income and ensure that they can afford the workers' rights agenda, which is really, really important.
I want to move on to where we're going to get workers from, and also to talk about what's going on across the Atlantic, but we'll do that after this break.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk. Is News Talk.
We're continuing with our Friday forum, and we want to talk about immigration and why it's not larger on the horizon. Kevin.
Well, the simple fact of the matter is, Pat, that it suits the three big parties in particular not to have it being debated, because none of them are comfortable with it. You have Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who have obviously overseen the immigration system. They have ministers from both parties involved in the running of it and the administration of it. And they have been uncomfortable. We've seen Fine Gael obviously shift more to the right on it since Simon Harris took over. And then obviously Sinn Féin feel that they have lost a chunk of their voters over that particular issue. So all they're doing by talking about it is highlighting that it's a fact they're uncomfortable with. So I think, I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy among the three big parties. Of course it's not. But it just suits them all quietly to not have that the big topic of the election. I think that's the truth of it.
Sinead?
Yeah, and I think some of it is that it's less visible. I think when it was a really hot button topic, you know, you had the tents on Mount Street, and it was a very visible issue for people. And that's not there. If you live in the constituency, you still have the barriers, which I think is probably coming up for you, Jim, on the doors, I would imagine. But it has lessened, the heat has lessened. And I think part of that is we had a lot of the conversation based off what happened in November and based off people who wanted to talk about immigration in an anti-immigrant way. So the conversation was kind of being led by an anti-immigration voice, and that has settled, and the parties aren't kind of giving credence to that. I think where we will see it come up is specific constituencies where there is anger around resourcing and kind of how things have been done. And you will see some of those. We see this anyway when people come from the gene pool of one of the bigger parties that they do well. So someone like Noel Thomas in Galway, who, you know, has spoken a lot extensively about immigration, it's part of the reason he left Fianna Fáil, is doing very well in polling for Independent Ireland. So I think you will see individuals in constituencies where this has come up as a major issue do well.
I think there's also the general election is a slightly different dynamic, because obviously all of it is about the big picture stuff. Whereas in the local elections, there were specific pockets and specific areas that had a particularly passionate debate around this. Whereas in a general election, for example, where I am in North Dublin, there are people on the city council who are basically there on an anti-immigration platform. But I can say with some confidence that they won't come around the part of the constituency where I live.
They won't get
the same welcome they will in different parts of the constituency. Yep. So it's easier to get on a council than into a
Just to respond to Sinead's point, like Fianna Fáil has no hesitancy talking about immigration. We have a section in our manifesto. I was on the Tonight Show on Virgin 2 nights ago talking about it. We're talking about it here. I think it's important we talk about it. It's obviously a political issue. If we don't talk about it, normal people, centre-ground politicians, if we don't talk about it, it's going to be left to the extremes. And that's why I think we should talk about it. It is an issue that comes up on the doorstep, as Sinead mentioned. It was a particular issue in my constituency because of the, I suppose, the proliferation of tents there about 6 months ago. That issue has been resolved by government. We don't see the tents around Mount Street anymore.
Some might argue the barriers are worse.
Yeah, the barriers are gradually coming down. They started taking them down from Harold's Cross Bridge, and gradually they're coming down. And I think they've done a pretty good job in taking them down. Nobody wants to see them there, but I suppose what it is, it's a visible representation of the issue.
Yeah. And now, you had a go at Helen McEntee, didn't you?
No, about, I never have a go
about,
at any
stealing Fianna Fáil proposals in government.
Yeah. I didn't have a go. I commended her. I commended her because Fianna Fáil put forward proposals in respect of immigration and international protection. In May 2023, I wrote to Minister McIntyre, or put down the parliamentary question, suggesting that other countries should be designated as safe countries. And since then, we were advocating it on numerous occasions. Since then, she's done so. We advocated increasing the fines on airlines. She did so. So, I commend her for taking on board Fianna Fáil's suggestions. But when we're talking about immigration, we need to remind people there's sort of three facets to it. We've got we're members of the European Union. There's free movement of workers. We're in a union of 440 million people. We also have a very active work visa program. People come from abroad working in our hospitals and our restaurants doing great jobs. And then we have the international protection system. And where there was tension was under the international protection system, because that was the manifestation of the tension.
You might be interested to know that this morning the minister has hit back.
Okay. Well, firstly, I think there's probably women all over the country who will understand what it's like when men try to claim credit for their work. But nobody's elected here. Nobody has been elected here. My focus over the next 2 weeks is to get re-elected.
Good response.
Wow.
But under no circumstances was I trying to adopt the role of the man, because it was a lot of Fianna Fáil work that achieved that. It wasn't just me, it was my colleagues in the Shannon, Lisa Chambers and Fiona Loughlin. So,
well, you gave her credit for a touche moment there.
To be fair, Jim, I saw you on the telly last night, and I have to say it was one of those moments where I stopped. I'm going to try and not misquote you, but I actually rewound the telly to go, did he actually just say that? Where she made some jibe about you not taking a junior ministry when the opportunity was there. And you said something along the lines of, I could do more as a backbencher than as your assistant, which I thought was, first of all, your colleague James Brown is being demoted to her assistant.
Well, there are assistant chief whips, there are assistant editors. I'm sure you've got assistant producers.
But there are no assistant ministers now.
Is that what
you think James Brown is, though?
I was asked this today at the press conference. James Brown has done an excellent job in the areas which were delegated to him. You look at gambling reform. There was no gambling reform in this country for years. Mm-hmm. James Brown went in there, it was designated to him, and he got it done.
I told a junior minister one time that was he expecting to be a real minister? He said, I am a minister. I thought, well, a real one. And he took great exception to a junior minister not being seen as a real
minister.
Would you
like to just stop Helen in the new government?
What we're seeing here is a little bit more of the Abby Acton from the coalition partners. Like, honestly, at the end of this, you know, we're all going to be tired, but I think there will be a few Oscars dished out. The people who agree so completely and entirely, they vote for each other, they back each other, are now expecting us to believe that somehow there is a difference. It comes down to very little, and sometimes it's a difference of personalities. But when I hear them shrieking and shouting at each other and indeed digging at each other like this, I think people can see through it for the mess and that it is.
On to the immigration topic, which we started with in this section, and that the question of this new agency that Sinn Féin wants, how would that actually work?
So what we want to do is we want to streamline our system of immigration, because at the moment it comes under several different departments, and I don't think anyone is suggesting that the coalition, even the coalition, would have the neck to suggest that they're handling the issue of immigration well, because they're not. It has clearly caused issues in communities. It has also made millionaires out of people who are turning hotels into accommodation centres and making an absolute fortune out of it. And that is something that comes up on the doorsteps and something about which people are incredibly angry.
Where would Sinn Féin have put the Ukrainians, for example, who are living in these hotels?
So what we want to see is the state doing what the Catherine Day report had said, you know, and what they say they were committed to, but it was never done, which is to build reception centres. That should be done. It should have been done a long time ago, and it's not. So what we want to see is...
To build them if you were to be in government? Will you build them?
The reception centres need to be built. And what we need to do is we need to look at those communities where they might be able to sustain additional people and put the centres there.
So you're not specifying where they might be, because particular communities...
No, I want to be clear. What we will do is we will use the evidence and the information available, and we will ensure that where an accommodation centre is to be built, it is built in a community that can sustain it. What we will not do is go to areas of deprivation or areas where people can't access the GP, where there are no community centres, where they have been neglected by successive governments, and say to them, well, now there are additional people. Because we have to be fair to the people who are seeking international protection. We have to be fair to those communities as well.
Sinead?
Yeah, I think there's a really valid point in looking at the kind of business of immigration that has popped up. And I think that is an absolutely fair talking point and something that we should be able to talk out loud.
I mean, we have to bear in mind, I suppose, that no one expected that war in Ukraine, and it was all done in a hurry.
No, and I think the problem was that was happening anyway. So that was kind of because of the accommodation crisis. It was already happening that these unfit places were being used. And obviously people who know how to make money saw it and saw opportunities, and then that exploded. So the real money came on board after the Ukraine war, but the foundations had already been set for that. And we did know that from the white paper, that something different needed to be done for that to be avoided. We've already gone down that road. It's about bringing it back and not giving legitimate talking points to anti-immigrant voices, yeah. And yeah, actually to have adult conversations about it.
The numbers have increased very significantly, and that's obviously put pressure on accommodation. If you look back in 2019, there was around 4,500 people who applied for international protection. This year it's going to be about 25,000. Last year it was 13,500, same the year before. So the state has a huge, I suppose, burden on it to provide accommodation. At present we're providing accommodation for more than 32,000 international protection applicants, and then we have the accommodation we're providing for the Ukrainians. So listen, again, it's really challenging. But the state is trying to provide accommodation. If you look at what the tent situation now is, that has been provided as well. Just in respect of Louise's proposal about, and Sinn Féin proposal about, a new migrant agency, I think we have to be careful about that. One thing we don't want to do is to transfer responsibility for integration and international protection from an elected government official and a government over to a statutory agency, an agency that will then, politicians will be able to say, well, listen, that's not our responsibility.
I can put your mind at rest there, Jim, because that's not the intention at all. The intention is that this new agency will sit under the Department of Justice.
And will it be a statutory agency?
And it will sit under the Department of Justice, and the minister agency. And the Minister for Justice then, will be ultimately
then
responsible.
Then would they be civil servants?
You'll have a chief executive.
What they will be the people who are in the system existing already.
So they're all
coming
civil
together,
servants.
Coming together under one body,
run
and
by
they
the
will
civil
be members
service.
Of An Garda Síochána. So, they will be members of the IPAS service already, to bring them together, because at the moment, and I don't think anyone, not even anyone in the coalition, would say we have a system that's streamlined. We have a system that is incredibly disjointed.
Okay, but just to be clear, what you're proposing is another branch of the civil service.
What we are proposing is an agency that will sit within the Department of Justice
that
will streamline and manage our immigration system.
What's going to happen, Louise, then, is that when there are political questions to Minister for Justice, whoever's in government, about the international protection system, what are you doing? What's going to happen is the minister is going to be able to say, well, sorry, that's not my responsibility. That's the responsibility of the migrant agency.
No, I'm sorry, Jim. Please, please, please don't conflate the hands-off, not my responsibility attitude of your coalition with any future government with Sinn Féin in it. Sinn Féin ministers in government will take responsibility. We will ensure that our immigration system is fair, efficient and enforced. And that is not being done at
the moment. What's going to happen
is,
at present, when people are challenging the international protection system, they sue the Minister for Justice. Under your proposals, we're going to have this new agency that will be the defendant in cases, that will have responsibility for it. And it'll be a bit like the HSE in a way. We're delegating responsibility away from a politician. And I don't think that's a good idea.
Can I move on? Much of what's being promised by all sides depends on having a good national income. And we're doing very well with the corporation taxes and all the rest. Trump is in power and he's got a parcel of rogues as his proposed cabinet. They may not all make it through, but things could get a bit rough, Kevin.
Well, there's no doubt about it. It's quite interesting that Trump 2.0 hasn't been met with the same shockwaves as we had 8 years ago, where nobody really knew what to expect with Trump. The truth is, this Trump presidency could be worse than the first, because the shackles are off. He now has the popular vote won as well, so he feels he has a full mandate. And what we're seeing even in his cabinet appointments is that they are, it might be unfair to call them sycophants to him, but they are certainly loyalists to him. They are people who will follow the gospel of Trump, which wasn't necessarily the case the first time around, when he was trying to put people with some level of political experience or know-how in there to kind of have a rounded cabinet. This time we are seeing people who are anti-immigration, anti-woke, anti-diversity, anti-globalisation, basically the anti-cabinet.
Yeah, and when you look at it, and I think, Pat, your point is right, that like not all of these people will end up in the positions. What he's doing is rewarding fidelity. He's saying all of these, you know, someone like Tulsi Gabbard, who left the Democrats in 2022 to come on board, she's been, you know, handed a job to say, look, I promised you something. I'm sure all of these things were done.
And she's pro-Putin, pro-Bashar al-Assad. She is some piece of work.
Yeah, and then you see, you can actually track the change in America, and the change particularly in the Republican Party with someone like Marco Rubio, who, you know, you would see as probably like a John McCain kind of, you know, very very robust on foreign policy, non-America
not
first,
too many years ago,
not
they
isolationist.
Would never let the party be hijacked by Trump.
Yeah, and now,
he's bent the knee.
Yeah, he's so... You know, if someone, would he then revert back, or is he fully, like, has he been, like what Louise was saying, has he been play acting, or is he fully
and
now
on board? I wonder
about
people like Lindsey Graham, who is a sycophant to Trump, but who will see himself usurped in the affections of the president by all these newbies, these bizarre...
The collection of climate deniers, science deniers. I am going to put my faith, Pat, in the confirmation process.
Ooh,
and hope that the confirmation process does its job and ensures that that the persons who are competent are confirmed. I would, yeah. When you look,
you think there'll
be
enough Republicans who'll kind of say no to Trump?
I would hope so. But I think Kevin is right. You know, the shackles are off now, and that should be obviously something to keep an eye to. But when you look at the people who are going forward, I mean, a vaccine denier for the health brief, science deniers. I mean, really, I cannot...
An anti-woman in the military person going to be the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, your average, ordinary American person might have something to say about that to their local representative.
That's the one thing that they don't think he'll get through, except because
he has no qualifications.
And obviously, like, the army is, you know, something that the Republican, they will really care about.
I wouldn't be too sure about it. It has to be, the confirmation hearings take place before members of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and ultimately then it goes to a full vote if they can't get them through. Trump has taken over the Republican Party. They have a majority in the Senate. They have a majority in the House of Representatives.
And one of the wrinkles in all of this is that many of the people who might say no to Trump are up for re-election in the Senate in 2 years' time.
And look what happened to the people before. Like, you can commend Liz Cheney for her bravery and her principles.
But she's out.
This guy's coming after her now. It's shocking. But what it does show is the power of the US presidency. Not only does he have the power under the Constitution to appoint all the cabinet ministers, secretaries for commerce and whatever, he can also, if you judge it in an Irish context, every statutory agency, he can put a new head in there. He has complete control of the United States of America.
And
it's astonishing.
It was interesting. I heard a news report this morning announcing RFK, Robert F. Kennedy, as the new health secretary, or set to be. And it was talking about, he's the former environmentalist and conspiracy theorist is to take over. And it was said as if they were equal.
Put that on your business
card. It was a qualification.
Former environmentalist and current conspiracy theorist.
If you heard someone is taking on the pharmaceutical industry in America, you would think, okay, well, that's a good thing because, you know, it's not a functioning healthcare system where people can get access to the pharma that they need. But then he's doing it for conspiracy theory reasons. So it's we're in a place that I think we're seeing the lack of regulation and nowhere clearer of lack of regulation on social media companies and the internet. Elon Musk has set up his Department of Government Efficiency. He's asked for people to come and work for that department for free. He wants their ideas. And how do you apply for that job? You send a direct message to a Twitter account. Do you know what you have to do to be allowed to send a direct message?
You have to have a blue tick.
You have to have a blue tick. Guess how much that costs you? $84 a year.
People on the doorstep here. Kevin's right, saying that the Irish election hasn't ignited yet. On the doorstep, people, a lot of the time, they want to talk about American politics. And I think they appreciate the fact that standing in front of them is a person of sanity. Now, I'm not just applying that to myself.
It's a nice thing you've said about Louise.
It's true. People compare the Irish political system to the American political system, and I think we need to commend Eamon de Valera for the Constitution he gave, as opposed to the founding fathers.
The only postscript to all of this is that the shares in vaccine manufacturers have tumbled on foot of the announcement about RFK Jr. That says it all. America's about money, 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 money.
Yep.
My thanks to Kevin Doyle, to Jim O'Callaghan, to Sinead O'Carroll and Louise O'Reilly. That's all we have time for. Our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the News.com app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to our team for the last time. Leaving today, my producer, Sue Murphy. Thanks for everything you've done over the last while since you've been working with me. You will be sadly missed. Researchers Keane Burns, Megan O'Halloran, Alice O'Leary, the broadcast assistant, Anne-Marie Kane, Cormac McDonough on sound. But up next, it's Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.